Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Global Fact Radio. Global Fact Radio brings you such shows as Conscious Living, How To with Dean Clifford, and Truth Talk. Today, featuring How To with Dean Clifford.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our first episode of How To with Dean Clifford. Today is November 5th, 2012. I'm your host, Tony Boutros, here on Global Fact Radio. This will be our opening episode, I guess, with Dean Clifford. And him and I came up with this idea about a couple of weeks ago when he was a guest on our regular show, Conscious Living, which airs every Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And when we had Dean on the show, we decided to do a weekly show on Monday nights, and it would be, instead of being a regular interview, it would be kind of a how-to. And each week would be a different topic, so Dean will teach us how to do something based on his vast knowledge that he has. So before we get started, though, a couple of quick announcements. If you wish to, if you have any questions for Dean and you'd like to pose these questions on the air, you can do so by calling 646-478-5728. And if you don't happen to have unlimited long-distance calling to the U.S., because this is a U.S. number, you can make this call completely free by going to our episode page, which you should be on already, and you'll see the call-in number, and to the right of that number, you'll see a Skype icon. Simply click on that icon, follow the instructions, and then the call will become a Skype-to-Skype call completely free. If you don't mind also clicking the follow button on the same episode page underneath our logo, that way you'll be notified of any future episodes of Global Fact Radio. And that's about it. And now we'll get started with our guest, Dean. Are you there?
Yep.
And
how
you
doing?
Hear me okay? I'm doing great. Do you hear me okay?
I can definitely hear you okay.
Okay, and you're loud and clear as well. So, Dean, this is our first episode, and since you and I didn't have much of a chance to chat about the topic, I did put a little kind of a little poll on Global Fact Group last week, and ask people what they would like to have you talk about, and most of the votes went to how to drive lawfully without a driver's license, how to set yourself up so you can drive lawfully without a driver's license. I guess a lot of people would like to do that. We're not restricted to that. If you have a different topic you'd like to teach today, that's fine. Some suggested maybe we should start right from the beginning, from the start, meaning that you can start by teaching people how to set themselves up to be sovereign, like yourself.
Yeah.
So, man, I'll leave that up to you.
I was going to say, of all the ones for people to pick, it's usually the one that I tell people not to do as their first battle, because it's such a minuscule thing to just maintain a driver's license and pay the $50 a year and just do the speed limit and not drink and drive, and you're really not going to have any problems with the government. Because as soon as you start driving without a license and driving with no insurance, that's when they start taking cars and leaving you without a means to transport yourself or to get to work or to gain a livelihood in whatever private sector that you're doing, construction or anything else. So it's usually not one I recommend for people, especially as a first time out, unless they're real serious about this and they really want to learn their rights. And they really want to go all in and just, no, I'm done, I'm out, I'm sick of this, no more statutes for me, I'm just giving everything back to the government and I'm going right back to my natural rights. And there are a few people that contact me and say that, and I'm like, whoa, I'm like, hang on, let's baby steps here. You guys got to remember that we've been brainwashed and programmed our entire lives. You don't just, wake up one day and just say, no, you know what, I'm just gonna do this now. Yeah, there's a learning process to it first. and we can't be rushing into things. Having said that, they really don't like people driving with no driver's license and no license plates, because one of the big things is that really tends to wake other people up in traffic when they see a car ahead of them that has a private plate or something else that's, you know, unregistered or has no insurance on it. Or I'm a pretty reasonable fellow, and I can understand the state's desire for some law and order and to have registered license plates for purely identification purposes only. But sadly, until they actually start doing that, I really feel no need to put one of their plates on any of my cars until they're actually doing their proper job. We probably should hold off on that until we've done more of a primer on things. I don't know what people's level are at that are going to be tuning into the show here. This is all still fairly new. I usually try to stick with people with the first fights, the most important ones that I consider to be the most important, which is property taxes and income taxes. Because there's no such thing as either one. There's no such thing as property taxes, and there's no such thing as the Income Tax Act.
Okay.
And that's usually ones I like to start with.
That's fine. We can start with that. I just wanted to make a little note here. Remember that, Dean, when you and I talked last week or a little bit over a week ago, that the biggest fear that people have is, or the biggest objection that people have to what you teach, is the fact that they don't think it's doable. They don't think it's real because there's no real evidence out there that proves that it could be done. So let's assume, for the purpose of this show, the How to Dean Clifford, let's assume that everybody wanting to learn how to be completely out of the system. We can do shows where somebody can stay in the system and just want to learn how to do something specifically. We can do shows like that as well. But let's,
yep,
for the sake of clarity, assume that that's what we're trying to teach people, is how to be sovereign, whatever that means.
Then I can give you, this would come down to a personal choice as to which road people want to take then, and that should be an educated choice. I have people that tell me that they don't want to learn any of this stuff. They don't want to learn how to take control of their person. They don't want to learn how to play in the system, quotation marks, because there are benefits to it, and we do have a lot of rights we can enforce through that system and with that system. The downfalls to getting out of the system altogether are literally that you're going to have a great deal of trouble banking, getting a job at any type of corporation or any type of company where they don't tolerate these types of ideas. They're just completely not open to just paying people with a check in exchange for an invoice for the amount of time that they work for a couple of weeks. But we have had people successfully negotiate that with the companies that they work for. When you're out, you're out. And if you've been injured and you want to go to court and you want to sue somebody, or you want to use the system in any way that requires the use of your person, you have no access to any of that if you have no person to represent you. So that's some of the, and so the, but the benefits to that are, is again, you're out of the system, no more statutes, you will be recognized if you do it properly, and I do say properly, and that's some of the things that we should get to talk about, is that proper notice is not sending the Pope a letter telling him that he's a pedophile and that his papal bull from the 1200s where he claimed your soul is his property no longer has any force or effect over you, therefore you're free. Because that's what those are kind of things that people are doing, thinking that they're sending notice that they're, you know, that they're taking possession of their soul back. And this is the problem that people have to, this is why people need to become educated and learn, is this is we'd spoken about this before, Tony. It's that jurisdictional issue that most people don't understand. They keep mixing commerce with natural law, and you can't do that. And that's one of the big problems people have had in the Freeman movement, if you want to call it the Freeman movement. That's what they're calling us now. For the last 12 years that I've been particularly involved with all this, is that people are trying to go into courts that are pure commercial courts, and they're trying to enforce natural law or God's law in these pure commercial courts. Now, we've heard it right from judges' mouths that this is that's not recognized here. This is a commercial court. We're here to do Caesar's work today. This is all Roman civil law, right? That's what Catholicism is. It's Roman civil law. And I'm damn sure, and I mean, I haven't opened up too many history books on the subject, but this all goes back to Rome and the creation of the Catholic version of Christianity, which was nothing more than making the Roman commercial law a religion. So instead of sending armies in and forcing people to become part of their Roman system of law, they basically turned it into a religion to get people to fight to the death to protect it instead of fight to the death to, you know, get them to be rid of it, so which apparently they were very successful with. So it is all commerce. These courts are all commerce.
Okay, so for the sake of clarity then, would you say, just so can our audience who are not well-versed on this yet, would you say that someone can stay in the system and still use your knowledge and take advantage of it for their benefit?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And let me give you a comparison to that. You can build a house with a handsaw and a hammer and just a bulk pouch of nails, right? You can saw wood without using a skill saw. You can build the house. It takes you longer, but you can do it. And if there was a tool out there you could use that would speed things up, that would be of great benefit to you, it would help you tremendously if you simply learned how to use it. People should maybe learn how to use that, especially if that's the way the rest of society is functioning right now, but actually learn how to use it. I mean, anybody that buys a brand new nail gun and takes it and puts the point of the gun to their leg and puts a nail into their leg is probably not going to want to use that nail gun again because they didn't learn to use it right. They ended up just harming themselves with it. And they're, this I'm going back to a hammer and nail. This gun's a piece of shit. It does nothing but hurt me, right? But that's only because it's a tool they didn't learn how to use, or they've been misled as to what it is, and they just don't want to take the time to figure it out. So they just want to go back to.
So then the goal of the free man movement is not necessarily to return to common law. It's to learn the ins and outs and how to survive in their system.
Well, the system's here, like it or not. I don't like it. I'd actually prefer to change it completely, but until we get more people, we're not going to do that. And I'd say it's more likely that we're going to want to operate in and out of it at the same time. I mean, there's... And this is where I try to get people to understand the concepts of capacity and jurisdiction. You use the person when it's necessary to use a person, and the rest of the time you're not really functioning in commerce. Like when I'm just traveling down the roads and I'm minding my own business, or I'm even on my way to my own private job site, or I'm in my living room, this is all just the jurisdiction of natural law. It's only when I have to go do banking or go to the courts or something using the birth certificate where I have to engage in commerce in their system, that's just a tool for me to use. And it's there for me to use when I want to use it as long as I've established myself properly. It's just a very, very complicated tool.
Okay, then we've set up the parameters of what, being this is the first episode, we beg the forgiveness of our audience is that we are kind of doing this on the go, kind of on the fly. We didn't know how exactly to set the format up. So what we got the parameters of the show that we're not really focusing on specifically opting out of the system or teaching people how to work only within the common law jurisdiction. We're going to teach them how to do it so that they can function within the existing system as it is. Now, for our audience who have questions on the chat room, your questions are not being ignored. They will be taken care of in our second half, which is after the first hour. So we're now going to turn it back over to Dean. Dean's going to start with his first, lesson today, which is he said income taxes. Said he's going to talk about today.
Yeah, we'll even wait to get onto that. We'll talk a little bit more about let people know not to be deterred. Like beginners, when you're the first time you're hearing this kind of stuff, like the first time I heard it, I was so confused and it was gibberish to me. It was like another language, and it is another language. And you can't get turned away and get frustrated with something just because you're not picking it up right away. It's no different than going to French classes and you don't know a word of French and the instructor is just talking in French. So until you learn a little bit more about what we're going to be discussing, it is going to seem very, very confusing, very overwhelming, and people are going to get turned off from it. And that's actually what the government and the courts and the Bar Association, that's what they all count on. They count on people being lazy. They count on people not thinking it's so overwhelming or it's so difficult to understand, there's no point in even bothering. But it actually turns out to all be incredibly simple once you kind of get into it a little bit and you start to understand some simple concepts to do with law. And the biggest problem there's been over the years that I've found, and this maybe should be the first topic, even before income taxes, is what is the person? Like, what is a person? What is a person in law? Because that seems to be the most confusing topic for everybody who's been in this movement for the last 15 years that I've seen. Because it took me 4 years to get a decent answer to that question when I first started looking into things. People were calling it a straw man. People were calling it the corporate version of you, or there's a million names they were calling it. And the birth certificate name. And again, when we couldn't understand it and we couldn't figure things out because you're on the outside looking in, we all just got frustrated and we took the first step that most people think of immediately, which is, well, forget this, I just want out altogether. And we just kind of want to give everything back and say, well, no, piss on this. But then when we learn more about it, we start to figure out, well, wait a minute, no, this is all ours. We own this all. This is ours. So instead of giving it back or not participating in a system anymore, the route that I took 2 years ago was that I started telling people, no, wait a minute, hey, this is not right. This stuff is all ours. We own this all. We shouldn't be walking away from anything. We should be taking control of what is ours. And that's the true position of power. And it turns out to be kind of true because there's been some great things that have happened now since we started figuring this out. And the misconceptions about what the word person is and what a person in law is. And people have to understand, again, that there's two worlds here that are existing over top of one another, like cellophane over something. And we've got the law of the land, which is natural law, which exists on the actual physical land. And then above that, we've got the Holy See of Commerce. And that's why Vatican City is known as the Holy See. Right? The Holy See is commerce. That was the religion of the Romans. So they developed a commercial system to overlap our own that exists above it. And it's known as the waters over the land. And that is the Holy See of Commerce that exists over the land. And that's the arena that they drag all of us people into and create persons for us to play in this game, which is all it is. It's a game of commerce. And so these persons were created, and they're ours, and they're ours to use. But we don't know that. We don't know how to use it. And so we end up getting screwed by playing in a game where we don't know the rules and we don't understand how to use our player, if you want to call it that. So I guess that'd be the first concept people need to understand, is that everything that's going on, every interaction with a police officer, with the government, everything is all taking place in this completely different jurisdiction, almost like a different dimension. And that dimension doesn't recognize natural law or the law of the land, and the law of the land doesn't recognize commerce. I mean, that's even in the Bible. God is no respecter of persons, because persons are a creation of man, right?
That's correct.
So it's just a game. It's a commerce game that was created, and we need to get caught up and we need to learn how to play this, because they're using it to steal everything that is ours, including our labor. Most importantly, our labor and our energy. This game is being used to steal our property. You got to remember, your labor is property. My time is my property, and it's a non-renewable resource. It's mine to give away, to sell, or to exchange with somebody as I see fit. And what I get back for that hour that I decide to exchange with somebody is my property. And that's where we start to get into the tax argument with the Income Tax Act and all this other stuff. So,
Ancient, By any chance, are you logged into the chat room?
I am not, but I could.
Okay, maybe it might be a good idea because this gentleman, Derek Moran, he's posting so far four definitions of the word persons. I'd like to see your comments on that.
Absolutely. Where's the chat room there?
If you just basically go to the episode page, which is...
Are you able to Skype that to me quick?
I can Skype that to you. Just give me a second here.
Yeah, just give me a link on there. There's about a thousand different definitions for every word. This is another thing that, that people for years, people used to send me new definitions they found. Oh, well, this definition is this, and this definition is this. And for a couple of years, I used to think it was real important to find this almighty definition of a word in an obscure book somewhere we're going to take into court to prove that a person is this or a person is that or a taxpayer is this and a taxpayer is that. But all definitions of words is when two parties come together, like, say, me and you, Tony, and we want to enter into a contract together. We outline what we have agreed the definition of certain terms are going to be, so that we can't confuse them later when each of us shows up with a different dictionary. Because those dictionary
sense.
Definitions have no have absolutely no bearing on our contract. They're just somebody else's definitions of what that word is. We can choose to use that definition, but then we have to agree to that. And people have to understand that's what's going on in statutes today with the government. They've redefined all the words being used. So something that we think that in the common course of the English language means something, in legalese, which is their version of the language, it means something completely different. Which is why when we're going into court and we're speaking normal English, we're saying words, they don't have the same definition in that courtroom because that courtroom runs on very specific definitions that are in their statutes. That's why they have things like the Interpretation Act of Canada, where words are redefined right within the act themselves. And that means that in this act, this word means this specifically. So it doesn't matter if you go find a definition of a word in Black's Law Dictionary that contradicts the definition in that statute. Because they've said, no, in this statute, this is the definition of the word. So your definition you just went and found is irrelevant.
Well, the definition that Derek Moran posted was according to what he's saying. This is the one they provide the police officers in the police officer's manual.
Nope. Okay, let me go to the chat window here. Yeah. I think it's loading right now. Yeah, I've got the police officer's arrest manual. The police manual of arrest, seizure, and interrogation right here that the police in North America use. So, okay, let's see. I'm scrolling up here now. Let's see which definition we got. I'm going all the way up here. Person in the police officer's manual 2000 of the Criminal Offenses and Criminal Law by Gary Rodriguez. Scope of person is set out in Subsection 2 of the Criminal Code, yes, it is. Beyond the individual, covering additionally public bodies, corporations, societies, and companies, yes. But groups having common characteristics such as race, religion, color, and ethnicity, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Term human being. Yeah, again, find me a definition of the word human being. A human being is not descriptive. You are a human being something. Right now, I am a human being this. You can't just be a human being. Criminal code, every one person and owner, yeah, include Her Majesty in an organization. That's exactly it. Section 2, the definition section of the Criminal Code of Canada, it actually says includes Her Majesty in an organization, not include. It says includes Her Majesty in an organization. Last time I brought that up with somebody, I said, well, if every one person or owner includes Her Majesty and an organization, which one am I, Her Majesty or an organization? Because you'll find that in the English language, which is not redefined in any act or statute of Canada, including the Interpretation Act of Canada, the word includes is an exclusionary term. It means that everything but the two things following this word are excluded. It's like saying the basket includes apples of the green variety.
So in every other apple is not included.
There's only green apples in the basket. Because what follows the word includes is the only thing that it includes. It's exclusionary, I think they call it. If you look up the word include in Black's Law Dictionary, includes, it says it's exclusionary. And it's the inclusion of one is the exclusion of all others. So whatever you include after the word includes, you exclude everything else, period, in life. But those are irrelevant arguments when we start getting into court. We argued about definitions for a decade, and it turns out to be exactly what I thought when I finally got frustrated enough to say this is all horseshit. It's all a hamster wheel. They want you to get in there, and they want you to make stupid friggin' arguments about nonsense that I don't care about. I don't care what the definition of their words are. We have to turn things around on them and say, well, I mean, anybody can go through their acts. It doesn't take you long to figure out that right in their own acts, it tells you that their acts don't apply to you. So it doesn't matter what the definition in their acts are. It's no different than me being in my house right now and passing something called the Dean Clifford Act, where I name you, Tony, and say, Tony must clean my house. Well, there it is. It's in writing. I passed it. So I guess that means that's a law now. You have to come clean my house, right, Tony?
Of course. Be right there.
Yep, perfect. Okay. Yeah. It has no force or effect on you. I can pass anything I want. It's nonsense. You got to remember, government is not forbidden from passing laws that they have no authority to pass. Those laws just have no force or effect. And I can show you the case law and even the right in the actual charter itself, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, where it actually states in there that the courts have a duty and an obligation to view laws that have no authority on whoever they're passed against to dismiss those kind of things as being of no force or effect. The law has no force or effect. Government can still pass nonsense, but it's unenforceable. I can write up something right now that says Tony must clean my house. It's unenforceable. Because it'd be a I can't come and force you to do it because that'd be a violation of your human rights. I'm putting you into subjugation. I'm forcing you to do something for free. Otherwise, I'd have to come to you like natural law dictates and say, hey, Tony, how much for you to come clean my house? And if you want to do it, you'll give me a price. That's just all contract law. Problem is, the government's got us volunteering all our time into obeying crap that doesn't apply to us. And it's not hard to find out that it doesn't apply to you. I can send you a link to that right now. All you got to do is go to, the two pieces of Supreme Court of Canada sites that I usually send to people, which I won't get into right now. And go to Heritage Canada. There's actually an actual website that tells you how Section 32 of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms clearly establishes that the charter only applies to the government, period. Now, this is just logical. Does it not make sense that a government's charter would only apply to them? No different than Coca-Cola's policies only apply to Coca-Cola, because that's all a democratic government is. It's a corporation. Their laws apply to them. They have to trick you into holding an office within their corporation, or getting a social insurance number that identifies one of their employees for it to apply to you.
Okay.
And that's where we enter the Income Tax Act.
All right. So then that's where we need to go. Because I'm thinking here, based on what you just said right now, so they trick you into holding office so they can impose these regulations on you, which normally do not apply. You said they do that by tricking you into filing and applying for a social insurance number. So
yes.
I hold a social insurance number. How can, since I hold this SIN in my wallet, how do I make sure that these laws that they are trying to impose on me do not affect me?
Yeah. Well, number one, usually when people go and they get a job somewhere and the company they're going to work for asks them what their social insurance number is, most people just give it to them right away, don't they?
Yes.
And then right on your employment application form, you've now got this social insurance number attached to it. And that social insurance number identifies a federal employee of the federal government of Canada. Now, we just did that voluntarily. We didn't have to give a social insurance number. You're actually not obligated to. You're under no obligation to ever give a social insurance number, even though they might say we won't hire you without one. Now you've got a lawsuit. But most people are just, oh, God, I'll just give them the social insurance number. Well, that number is what actually grants the authority for the government now to come in and start taxing what you make by the hour. Because now you're not contracting in your own private capacity and exchanging your own labor in exchange for payment. You're actually operating through an office within the government, and they have the authority to tax that because that's an office of theirs. Okay, it's there. Can they ask for the social insurance card back at any time?
Of course, it's a card.
Of course, it's theirs. It's their property.
Yeah.
They can ask for it back any time. Well, that should tell you right there that it's not yours then. So if it's not yours, then why are you using it to identify yourself when you're going to work somewhere? Because you're not identifying yourself.
Well, since realistically no one's going to, well, I can't see anybody, especially with today's economy, turning down a job just for not refusing to show their social insurance number. So
yep.
Basically.
And they count on that.
Yeah, so it comes down to personal choice. How important is this job to you compared to how important your freedom is to you?
Yes. That's why I say pick and choose your battles. Right. If you've got I know people that have really good jobs that got into monstrous legal battles with the company they work for to halt deductions on their paycheck. Right. And it's a pretty advanced concept to start to understand what it really means to say that when you give a social insurance number, you're actually identifying an office within the federal government. But that is absolutely what is going on. It's all a scam. I don't usually like to use the word very often, but it actually is just it's a giant paperwork scam. here we go. Canadian Heritage Section 32, application of charter. The purpose of this section is to make it clear that the charter only applies to governments and not to private individuals, businesses, or other organizations. Okay, I've also got the Supreme Court case law at home right here where it says that no act of the government applies to interactions between private citizens, private individuals, private corporations, nothing. The charter does not apply to interactions between private individuals or corporations. So if the charter does not apply to non-government entities, how could any law that the government passes apply to non-government entities? That's clearly outside of their jurisdiction. So they have to trick you to come into their jurisdiction, where they can tax you and where their laws do apply and where their definitions do apply. And they give you all the definitions. And the excuse they use is that, well, you voluntarily signed up for a social insurance number. No one put a gun to your head. And just because you didn't learn what it was and you didn't read the fine print, that's not our fault. You should have done your due diligence.
I'd like to share something here that I went through back in the late 90s when I first learned at a seminar that social insurance number is not needed to work in Canada. And I kind of was skeptical, said, you know, well, this has got to be bogus. I want to check into it. So I called Revenue Canada, and the first person to answer the phone when I asked him, is it true that a social insurance number is not required to work in Canada? And they said, of course it is. I said, okay, thank you. Can you escalate this to the person above you? Ended up being escalated, and everybody pretty much said the same thing. But I got to about the fourth or fifth escalation, and this process took about 2 months before that person got back to me. And finally, I get a call from this person. Can't remember his name. He said, and I quote, well, there's no written law per se that says that you need a social insurance number to work in Canada. However, if you wish to participate in certain programs, then you need it. And then I said to him, well, what programs are these? He said, certain social programs. And I said, can you be more specific? He said, well, like welfare, unemployment insurance, that kind of stuff. I said, so if I choose not to participate in those social programs, then I do not need a social insurance number to work in Canada. Is that correct? He says, yes, that's correct.
Yep.
You
have the opportunity and the right to opt out, is what they actually call it, to opt out. O-P-T-O-U-T. I like the opt out, please. They can't force you to. They cannot force you to, because that would be slavery. Right? They're subjugating you. You're not allowed to work, apparently, without a government number that grants them the authority to come into your life and mess with it. Now, it gets an awful lot more complicated than this, but an awful lot more fun. And once you understand the concepts, it actually it turns out to be really quite simple as to what's going on. Boy, that just sounded really kind of obscure. But that's the one. It's the main concept people have to understand is nothing the government passes that they call a statute or an act or a bylaw has any applicability to a private individual, private citizen, private corporation, anything. It has absolutely no force or effect on those entities. But that doesn't stop them from trying to enforce it on you. Now, property taxes, same thing, by the way. Boy, we won't talk about the bond thing. I'm kind of reading the thing here as we're going. Let's get on to something else here, like income taxes aside. That's another big one. That was the first battle I picked up on was the income tax issue. Now, fortunately for me, as a contractor, and I've been in business for myself since I was 19, I never had to worry about an employer too much, which made the battle part of things a lot easier. And so when I just decided just to stop filing altogether, it was pretty simple. I just stopped filing. And it was 4 years before they really kind of started going to war with me, and that's when I really had to start learning what was going on. Even with property taxes, you got to remember, the government can't force you to pay taxes on something that you own just because you own it, just for owning it. That's another violation of your rights. So there's a bit of a more sinister scam going on there, where people don't realize that the government record actually shows that they're a tenant at their own home. You're not the owner. You're seen as a tenant. And the real owner is unknown. They don't know who the owner is, but they know that you're a tenant, and they're going to come and they're going to collect taxes off you because you don't own the property.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but isn't that due to the fact that under the Constitution says that to own property has to be bought with real money, which is gold and silver? Since you didn't do that, you don't actually own the property?
Well, that's impossible now anyways, but because our labor is now the gold. So, yeah, I'm paying for that property with my labor. My labor would have bought gold if I traded it for, but since they don't use gold anymore, the government has forced the fiat currency on us. It's not a valid argument to say that they weren't being paid with nothing of substance, therefore we don't own it. No, I'd say that's a red herring. That's a false road I think they're leading people down.
Okay.
I think it's because, you've got to remember, courts run on assumptions and presumptions. And you don't know what those assumptions and presumptions are. Most notably, provincial court. You ever notice that when you owe a property tax bill, they're not taking you to Queen's Bench or what would be Superior Court in some of the other provinces. They're never taking you to a court of equity. They're taking you to a statutory court, a criminal court.
Mm-hmm.
Provincial court is where they're taking you. And the reason for that is because you are an entity of limited jurisdiction in statutory court. You can't go in there and make the normal arguments that, the minute you start arguing statutes, you're sunk anyways. But the problem is because the Crown, because they operate on presumptions and assumptions, has made any number of assumptions and presumptions about you, and that's how the court's operating, and that is that they've incorrectly given your status. And because it's summary conviction, your status is already established before you even show up at the courtroom. And when you show up and you start making argument, you answer to the name, you've already answered in the capacity that they want you there in. And that capacity is as one of their officers. And as one of their officers, that's all that can show up in provincial court. That's all that court is for their own officers. That's it. So if you're there, that's proof in itself that you're one of their officers, unless you rebut that or protest that assumption. So you've lost from the get-go just on the presumptions and the assumptions being made by the Crown in the court if you don't know how to properly rebut that, because presumptions stand until they're challenged. So you have to challenge that stuff. And your status, your capacity, is assumed to be something very different that has no rights. So... And it's the same thing with, they get us to use wrong words. They've trained us incorrectly. I like to use the most famous one is the word Aboriginal. They've got all these Native people across Canada now showing up at court saying, I'm an Aboriginal, I have rights. And that's actually, it's an oxymoron. Aboriginals have no rights. The original people of this land have rights. But Aboriginals are the opposite of whatever original is. The same way you can be normal or abnormal. You can be clean or unclean. Right? So they change, they get us walking into court and they get us to prove how incompetent we are just by the first words out of our mouths. They already know how incompetent we are, then they know they can have their way with us. And that we don't properly rebut any of the assumptions or presumptions being made in the court. And that's another major point that people have to, like I say, we're covering a lot here today, but maybe people can get back to you maybe with some questions about this and we can start getting more specific after this, but...
Well, I think the best way to do it, Dean, which was the reason why I was trying to reach you the last couple of days, is if you and I, or you, or us both, come up with a topic and we post it on the episode page, because as this weekly show gains popularity, people are going to refer to it early on, like a few days before, and see what the upcoming topic is. So if you and I post a topic for the upcoming show, then they can start emailing in their questions to us, or... hopefully they'll join the Global Fact group and give their questions there. Either way, it's fine. But I think that's a better way to do it. You and I pick the topic. Today's topic is this. And then people can start sending in questions about that.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably the way to go on that. I'm just recovering from a little chest thing here, too, so my voice probably isn't exactly what it should be. Where was I going with that?
Somebody asked regarding what you're talking about. How to properly rebut falsified claims?
Yeah, rebutting false claims is sometimes just as simple, literally, as walking into court and saying that I'm protesting every claim made by the Crown. They have made false claims against me. They've made false claims as to my identity, my status, my capacity. I am not who the Crown claims I am. And the only reason I'm here is because I was told if I did not show up here today that they would send officers to my house to kick my front door in, to kick my teeth in, and then throw me in jail and drag me before the court. That's the only reason I'm here today. Now, there's about 15 things that you just really, really screwed up for them just by saying that. Ranging all the way from the false claims being made to the improper status they said you are, to the Crown having no claim against you, to you not being who the Crown said you were, to your attendance being forced and non-consensual, and that you have no desire to be there other than the fact you've been physically threatened to show up there. Just two sentences like that can put such an ass wrench into everything that they're planning on doing there in that courtroom. And in fact, it can't even proceed anymore. The court actually has to go back to a show cause hearing now. They can't even proceed. They have to go back to a show cause hearing because the Crown can't even prove your identity. You've rebutted every presumption and assumption that they made without even knowing what they made. And that's the other great thing, too, is because you don't know what assumptions and presumptions they've made, like most people would be shocked by finding out something as simple as this. Down in the States, the United States, if you actually do a Freedom of Information Act request, whatever it's called down in the States, on the IRS to get your master file, if you're down in the States and you got the IRS to deal with and you've got a Social Security number, when you get your master file and you look at what they've got you listed for as an occupation, it's going to be one of three things. You're going to be a foreigner who works in either alcohol, tobacco, or firearms from a foreign country. You're going to be a tobacco farmer, you're going to be a gun runner, or you're going to be something along those lines. They don't tell you that, though, do they?
Nope.
No. And this is very common. People that didn't believe this stuff have actually done it. They got their master file, and sure as shit, it turns out right there in the file you never see that the court operates off of, but it's never brought up because it's considered an established fact, you are a foreigner who runs guns. And that is why at every IRS raid in the United States, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms has to be present. A BATF agent has to be there. Because they've removed you from your proper status, and they've converted you into something that has no rights. And that's why they can do the abusive shit that they do to people. And it's no different here in Canada. If you have a social insurance number, and you're working under that number, and you are an officer of the federal government, you are an officer of a foreign power. You have no rights on this land. Because you are an officer of a foreign administrative organization based out of England. There's no questions about this. I can prove this in about 3 seconds or less. That we could do another time if you need to. But you have no rights here. You are a foreigner. And you're probably committing crimes here. And they can do whatever they want to you. You have
okay, so what's
no
the point,
rights.
What's the point of me holding to that social insurance number then? If I can work as self-employed, or if I can convince my employer that he doesn't need my social insurance number, what's the point of having it?
There is no point to having one. You may want some of the benefits that the corporation, or the Foreign Corporation of Canada, offers, not to be confused with the country of Canada. There's two going on here. There's the Commonwealth, the country of Canada, and then there's the nation of Canada, the democracy, the foreign corporation that you contract with for the benefit of unemployment insurance or welfare, or some other ridiculous perceived benefit in exchange for half of your wages. So it's nonsense. And everybody's got to remember also that even things like, say, you guys are in British Columbia, so there's the province of British Columbia, right?
Yes.
There's two different provinces. There's the one province, which is a federal franchise of the federal government. It's a sub-corporation like Subway. And then there's the actual land, the de jure government that represents the land mass, like land titles and places like that. So there's two different entities going on there. And you're contracting with the federal commercial version, which means that the minute you enter into a contract with these people, you're entering into their jurisdiction willingly, and that's always by contract. Again, they're never forcing any of this shit on you. We're always applying for it, thinking we're going to get something for free from this corporation. Well, we're not. And the reason that this actually is a very important concept people have to understand is because as soon as you voluntarily act in the capacity of an officer of a foreign corporation, you are stripped of all your natural rights. And there's Supreme Court cites on this in Canada that clearly state that as an officer of a corporation, you have no human rights. And that is because in order to extend... If they were to extend human rights to an officer of a corporation, they would extend human rights to the corporation itself. And corporations have no human rights. Therefore, directors and officers of corporations can't have human rights. They can only have the benefits and the privileges extended to them by that corporation. And if you happen to be an officer of the Foreign Corporation of Canada, the rights that they've given you are known as statutes, acts, bylaw, codes, all that kind of horseshit. Now you have to obey that stuff.
Now, Derek just posted the, he said, this is the law that says you have to pay property taxes.
Yep.
And it says there's no application for that. It's just a statement.
Of course there's no application for that. It's not applicable at all except to officers of their own corporation. Again, who does Coca-Cola policies apply to?
Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola.
Employees.
Okay.
Yeah.
The city that you live in, Tony, do you think that there's one guy, do you think that there's a specific sales territory that covers the area where you live in for Coca-Cola? Somebody's got a specific sales territory. There's probably even detail on a map somewhere. This is this distinct sales territory within Coca-Cola that the people in this area fall under.
Okay. So, fine. That's it. Since it's supposed to be a how-to show here, so let's say I got my property tax bill.
Yeah.
And the law says all real property in this case, Ontario, but I guess in my case it would be British Columbia, is liable to assessment and taxation.
Yep, okay, yeah, perfect. Let's do the how-to. We'll do it right now.
Okay, so I have this bill. How do I go about it for not paying it?
Okay. Now, again, the presumption is that that statute or that bylaw does apply to you, first of all. And
right.
So the first thing you'd want to do is you'd want to challenge jurisdiction. And there's bad ways of doing this, and there's very good ways of doing this. And my favorite one is, and I started doing this a year and a half ago, and on the properties I've used this for, they halted altogether any action. Even in court, they actually they stayed proceedings, and I never heard about the matter again. It was very simple. And all I did was I sent them a letter, registered mail, right to the lawyer for the city that was handling the situation. And I said, look, I don't know where you people came up with the idea that I must obey the city of Winnipeg's charter. Property taxes, bylaw violations for breaking the city of Winnipeg charter. This stuff doesn't apply to me. And I went on to say, it's my understanding that this property is owned. And I never say things like, I own this property. I always say things like, it's my understanding this property is owned. And then I put fee simple absolute in there. And then I said, according to Black's Law Dictionary, 4th edition, now I'm picking my definition. This is the definition I want to use because I have no contract with these people. I'm not under any obligation to use any of their definitions. So here's my definition. I'm saying this property is owned fee simple absolute, and I'm saying this is the definition of fee simple absolute, which means free of condition. Free of condition. And ownership means right of use, by the way. People have to understand that as well. Ownership means right of use. It doesn't mean I own physically the molecules and I can bend them to my will. I own the right of use to this specific piece of property. And I own it free of any condition. And it's my understanding that property taxes and city codes are a condition of use. Who are you to put a condition of use on this property? So now I'm asking them to prove up their claim. And they never can. They couldn't answer that. They never will. They don't have a claim. They don't have any standing. They have no jurisdiction. They can never put a condition on the ownership of the property, because that would mean that they would have to own it, or they would have to have some standing in some way that would allow them to tell you what you can and cannot do with your own property. So that presumption is now gone. The court cannot operate off that. So they stayed proceedings immediately. They can never answer that. And they won't even try to, because if they actually tried to argue that, they would lose, and they would actually create case law that can be used against them. So they stay proceedings immediately, and they make sure that there is no case law ever established that people can use to help fight this stuff. So that would be one way of doing it. One way. There's thousands, but the big thing is you can simply ask a simple question like, and what does this have to do with me? Okay, when they say, well, you reside within the corporate limits of the city of Winnipeg or something like that. Well, number one, I'm not saying I reside anywhere. Do I reside somewhere? Can you prove that? Do you have a witness that can claim, a witness that you can bring to court that will testify to the fact, with first-hand knowledge of all the facts, that I reside in the capital C city of Winnipeg, which is a political jurisdiction. It has no force or effect on the land whatsoever. It's a political, non-geographically based entity, if you want to call it that. They show you in a map, oh yeah, this is where the city of Winnipeg's jurisdiction is. Okay, well that's also the sales territory for Coca-Cola. That's the sales territory for Pepsi. I bet there's 5,000 corporations that this landmass falls within their jurisdiction for their sales territory, which means that their policies apply within that area that shows up on that map. My question is, what in the fuck has that got to do with me? And they can never answer that. They hope you're going to go along with their bullshit, because that's
okay.
All it is.
So key there is jurisdiction then.
Absolutely. What's
okay.
Your standing in this matter? Who are you? Pepsi Cola cannot simply show up at my house and say, hey, look, you see this sales territory on this map right here? You're inside that sales territory. And Pepsi Cola Corp says that you have to pay a monthly fee to Pepsi Corp. Well, since when? What does Pepsi Corp have to do with me? I'm not a client. I'm not a customer. I don't work for you. Who are you? Get the hell off my property right now. Produce a contract. Why do I have to obey Pepsi Corp rules?
Okay, Sev asks, if they act on presumptions from the very beginning, how does
yes.
one rebut all presumptions without going to court?
Well, that, like I say, that was a good one that I did there a year and a half ago, which was it's my understanding that that this property is owned fee simple absolute, which means free of condition. Who are you to put a condition on my use of this land? Who are you? And that calls bullshit right there, because they can never prove who they are to demand anything from you, ever. They really need you to show up at one of their courtrooms to start arguing definitions of their stupid codes. I don't give a shit about their codes. They have nothing to do with me. I don't care what their definition of this word is, because nothing in their charter applies to me. You got to remember, the federal government of Canada incorporated the provinces, and then the provinces incorporated their own subsidiaries, like the city of Winnipeg. So the province of Manitoba created the city of Winnipeg charter, but the province of Manitoba charter was created by the federal government, and the federal government, the Charter and Rights and Freedoms, says that the charter only applies to the government. So how the hell can any subcorporation of theirs ever pass any law that has any force or effect on a private individual? They can't. It's all in the world of make-believe that they sucker you into. And again, people have to, if people don't know this, and this has relevance, again, with the property tax issue, because we're doing how-to right now, the Charter and Rights and Freedoms is Schedule B to the Canada Act 1982 that was passed in the United Kingdom. That's where the Charter for Canada comes from. It comes from a foreign power. That being said, how does any act or statute of Canada have any force or effect on this land? It doesn't. It's the Holy See of Commerce above the land. It's non-geographically based. That is why if you're a Canadian abroad with a social insurance number working on some other part of the planet, they can still tax you, because it has nothing to do with the land. It's a corporate and political affiliation that applies anywhere that you contract with them. It has no force or effect on this land. And the more you contract with them, the more agreements you've entered into with them, and the more other crap you're going to have to obey. So Canada exists wherever there's a government office, wherever there's a court building, wherever there's a cop car. That's Canada. No different than Tim Hortons exists wherever there's a Tim Hortons franchise and a Tim Hortons car out on the road. That's all Tim Hortons.
Okay.
And that's all Tim Hortons is.
If you can comment on Derek Moran's poster, he put Provincial Clear Fences Act, and then Seth asked...
Okay.
Asked another question, which I think is a good one. So Derek says, Provincial Offences Act, Criminal Law, Offences, what is that? Defences.
Yeah. Common law defences. Well, again, I think that's another red herring where the government has tried to make it look like they've adopted or recognized common law into their system to make us think that we can actually use their acts and statutes to defend ourselves. If I have nothing to do with Tim Hortons, there's no reason for me to know Tim Hortons policies. And the minute I show up at a Tim Hortons tribunal to defend myself with a Tim Hortons ID number and start using Tim Hortons statutes or internal policies to defend myself, I've pretty much done everything I can to help them in establishing that I am, in fact, an employee of Tim Hortons and must obey their crap. That's why they want us using their shit. The more of their shit we use, the more we get ourselves, the more we've especially if we don't understand what's going on, what we're doing, and who we are. And that's something else we can talk about another day, because there's a way we can flip that all around on them. And it's very bad for them. Because this is just,
so basically, in a nutshell, what you're saying is that you show up because you have to show up, otherwise they're going to kick down your door, kick in your teeth. So you go there and say, look, this is not who I am. Everything, all the assumptions you made against me are wrong. I have nothing to do with you guys. None of your stuff applies to me. I'm here because of this. Have a nice day and leave.
Yeah, basically. And you can even do that with a registered letter that you send into the courts and not even show up at court.
Okay. So for the future, I guess, for our listeners, what we'll do, since the, you know, again, we apologize, this is our first episode, and for the future episodes, when we have a topic in place beforehand, I guess if it's okay with Dean, of course, it always comes down to you, if we can have some of the backup, I guess, videos, documents to back things up, we can post, that would be great, if you're okay with that.
Yeah. I highly suggest, if people haven't watched them yet, they're actually outdated and they're old, and I plan on updating them soon. When I first started trying to help teach people this kind of stuff about a year and a half ago, we recorded some stuff at one of my offices here in Winnipeg, my office, and it was recorded for the benefit of the people that were there to watch it afterwards, because they couldn't take it all in all at once. And then somebody asked to put that up on YouTube, and I kind of laughed and said, yeah, go ahead for the whole 100 views it's going to get. And that's led us to where we are here today now, fortunately, I guess. The videos are old, but they get some of these concepts across. And we get more into what the person is. And the thing is it's hard to get into case-specific things or to talk about just income taxes or just property taxes or just driving with a license. And the reason is because once you understand what's going on and you understand what the person is, And the con job that's going on, the scam, you automatically know how to fight all of these things. All of them, because they're all the same thing. It doesn't matter if it's a speeding ticket right up to a statutory offense where there's no injured party, where you're looking at 15 or 20 years in prison, like income tax evasion. There's no difference between the lowest code violation and the highest code violation, because none of it applies to non-government.
Gotcha. I just want to, if you just give me a second here, I want to answer to Sev. Sev, the web page is still in construction. It's still a work in progress. It will not be ready just yet. The link I posted for you there is for the Facebook group, which you're welcome to join. Everybody else that's listening to the show tonight is welcome to join that group. You can either send your questions for our next future episode there, because what I will do is that about a few days before the show, I will post the link to the episode, to the show with the topic, and then in the comments underneath, you guys are welcome to put your questions there. Or you can mail your questions to me directly at this email address, which is tony@globalfact2012.com. That would be good as well. Okay, sorry, Dean, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where we want to go from there. I'm reading the one here about what are the things we can use in the system for our advantages and how. And that's something we should probably get onto at another time and date. But there's no question that there's a system here that works pretty well if we figure out how to use it. I mean, banking alone, people think that mortgages are fraud. And they're not. The simple fact is you didn't have the money to buy that house, and now you do, and you have a debt to pay back. There's no fraud there. And I can explain that whole system and tell you why there's no fraud there, but you just don't understand what's going on both sides of the equation. There's plenty of remedy there for you if you figure everything out. There's no fraud going on there. What they're doing is they're relying on your ignorance and your desire to want to go home and to watch football or watch hockey instead of learning, so that you can stay ignorant and not know how to go back to the bank properly and make your claims, make proper claims to the person, and to be able to do things properly. One of the benefits of the system is something as simple as getting your share of the yearly profits of Canada Corporation. Canada profits from all the natural resources and everything that belongs to us. And we're owed a share of that every year. And because we don't know who we are, and all we've ever been is officers of a foreign corporation, we have no claim to any of that. We don't have any claim to anything that the people of this land have a claim to, because we're foreign officers. And that's just another capacity. Same man, different capacity. And that's why I said earlier on the show that capacity is a very big thing people have to understand, which is the ability to take off a hat 1 second, 1 minute you're this, the next minute you're that. Without taking one physical step, you can be an unlimited number of different things just by wearing a different hat of authority. And that's the game that they don't want us to figure out, because we're all just man. After that, we play roles. And this stuff's been around for a while. I mean, where do you think the Shakespeare stuff came from? Right? The world is a stage, and we're all just actors. We're just acting roles. The problem is we're liable personally for whatever we do when we're playing one of those roles. Like if we're playing the role of an officer of a foreign corporation or a military, okay, well, then all the duties and obligations that go along with that role while you're playing it apply to you, and you're personally liable, the man. And that's why the argument when people are trying to do, when they show up for court and they say, I'm a man. Well, of course you're a man. We're all men here. The problem is the Crown's accused you of some type of code violation while you were acting as an officer of their corporation. Guilty or not guilty. But we don't know that's what we're being accused of. And the argument that we didn't know is irrelevant, because you're deemed to be competent in law. And if you sign the contract, it's presumed you read and understood all the terms. So unless you state something to the contrary, it's assumed you're competent and you understand all the terms and conditions of the contract, and that it was willing, because that's all assumed and presumed. That's why courts run on assumptions and presumptions. So there is a big learning curve here, and they're all applicable. I mean, that's why I was trying to say earlier that it's almost irrelevant to do case-specific ones with income taxes, property taxes, driver's license, all that kind of stuff, because it's all tied to the same concept, that once you assume the proper role within your person and you can start to enforce your rights, and that's why you want a person. You need a person to enforce your rights through.
Okay, so Mick asked, and I don't know if you want to answer that, but he asked, how do we rid ourselves of our sin? Now, Mick, what I think, see, that itself could be topic for a show on its own. Same with the next question, how do you pay debt with debt?
Okay, I'll actually address both those really quickly, though. And then on a future show, we can get into the more complicated if you want. The sin number, you don't even need to rid yourself of it. You can surrender it. That's not a problem. You can send in an affidavit that you didn't understand the terms of the contract, you didn't consent to this. Send it back, surrender it. It's my understanding, this is your property, the property of the government. Here's it back. But I don't recommend you do that, because again, just because you're in possession of something, it doesn't mean you're operating under it at all times. I may have a fishing license. Am I using it when I'm sitting next to my wood stove reading? Am I operating under that license at that time? No. And it's no different than when I'm out in a boat fishing. I can actually be out in a boat fishing, but not be operating under that license at the time. Which is why, again, it's not absolutely necessary to get rid of your driver's license, because the successful argument is, even if you have a license, it's not mine, and I'm not operating under it at the time of the complaint. Well, that's two very bad presumptions that have just been rebutted. And they can't, what the hell is the word for that? It's a terminal defect in the Crown's case, when you can make it a matter of public record that A, the driver's license is not your property, you're in possession of it, but you were not operating under it at the time of the complaint. And you want to know what witness the Crown is going to present, is going to testify to the fact that you were operating as an agent of the government at the time of the complaint. So it's irrelevant as to whether or not you're even in possession of one. Were you using it is a much better question. Well, no, I have this. I wasn't using it, though. I wasn't operating under it.
And I guess that's where the detailed show would come in, because, you know, the step-by-step, how do you prove you weren't operating under it, or how do you justify it, you know?
Yeah.
Because if I'm carrying a driver's license and I'm driving down my car and I happen to be speeding and the officer pulls me over and says to me, your license registration, please, what am I going to say to him? I have a driver's license, but I wasn't operating under it?
Yeah. Well, I have this, but it's not my property. This belongs to the province. Are you requesting it back? Because I'd be more than happy to surrender it to you. Now, we have people that have done that. And the cop gets really pissed off and gives it back to them and tells them to get the fuck out of here. So, yes, that does happen. Especially the ones that know better, some of these cops that do know a little bit better. And they do know that the license is not yours. It's not your property. So if it's not mine, how could I possibly be liable for it? Go to court and say, yeah, look, it's not my license. In fact, I don't even want to have it. But I was told by a cop that if I did not carry one of these with me, that I would be arrested if I was out traveling on the public roads. So that's the only reason I have one, is I was told I would be harmed if I did not carry one with me. But it's not mine. And I refuse to assume liability for anything that comes from it. You say that, it's done. Not only that, but now you've actually established some facts on a court transcript that you can take into federal court and sue the government, especially if you can get one of their officers to admit that, yes, if you don't have one of those, they're going to arrest you and they're going to take your property. Well, now that's uttering threats, and that's coercion and forcing you to contract with the state. So, yeah, those are all very powerful things, Tony. If you actually said what you had initially said to a client, you don't even know much yet. That's enough to really, really bugger up any claim they're trying to make against you.
Can they not argue, though, that you had to actually, you signed your signature to the applications for driver's license? Can they not get you that way?
That's fine. What did I consent to? What that license says is when I'm acting as an officer or an agent of the Crown, of the government, on the public roads, I need one of their licenses. Okay. When was I ever acting as an officer or agent of the government when I was on the roads? They need to produce a witness to say I was. They can never produce a witness to claim that. That's one of those presumptions that's left unrebutted.
I see what you did there. So you basically told them, yes, I signed for the application, but I signed for the fact that if I ever was to be operating as an agent of the Crown, then I will be subject to the
Crown. Then I have a license. Yeah, then I have a license to do it. There you go. So, because remember, by definition, a license is permission to do that which would otherwise be illegal. So one of two things is going on here, and this is that whole deductive reasoning and logic I try to tell people that we are completely devoid of these days. When they tell you require a driver's license, one of two things is going on. Either they're telling you you have no right to travel as a human being on the roads, or they're telling you that when you're an agent or officer of the government and you're traveling on the roads, you need a license as one, when operating the capacity of one of their agents. So they kind of leave most of that out, though. Which makes more sense to you, though? Are they trying to tell me I have no rights to travel? Or are they trying to tell me that when I'm operating as one of their officers, I need a license when I'm on the roads?
The latter.
Probably the latter, but they're not telling you that.
Yeah.
They're just kind of leaving that all unsaid.
Would I have the choice then of saying, okay, if he asked me for my driver's license, so I've been pulled over, and the officer asked for my driver's license, could I say, well, I don't need to show it to you today because today I'm not operating in the capacity of an agent of the Crown, operating a motor vehicle on the public road. I'm now traveling. I'm a traveler traveling on a public road. Therefore, I don't need to show it to you.
Yeah, I'm exercising my free will right now. I'm not one of your officers.
But then you still risk the chance of being arrested.
There's always a chance of being arrested. That's part and parcel to this law movement, if you want to call it that. And I try to tell people that. No risk, no gain. If you're not willing to actually stand on your rights and enforce them at the risk of being arrested and thrown in jail for a couple of days just to test you, then remain a slave. Stay there. Stay in the system. And be good. And follow every new statute or act and piece of shit that they pass.
I think it's a statement that you probably need to say on every episode, Dean, because this is where people kind of forget that you are trying to fight against very corrupt people.
Yes.
It's no different than you going up to the mafia and telling them, look, extortion is against the law. They're going to tell you, who gives a shit?
Yeah, I'm not paying you your protection money no more.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, when you're the only restaurant saying that, they're probably going to come and firebomb it.
Exactly.
If 20 of the 20 restaurants they've been extorting money out of get together and say, hey, we're not paying your protection money no more. In fact, if we see any of your people walking down the street, you better start fucking running. Well, they kind of lose a lot of power at that point. The fear is gone, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's fear.
Now, Seb, as for how often this show is going to go on, how long it's going to be weekly, this is our first one today. And how long? Well, we're going to try to do it weekly until either I get arrested or Dean gets arrested.
they tend not to do that anymore, actually. I think that they realized that was an exercise in futility, and every time they did it, I just made things worse for them. So I won't be getting arrested no more in jail. And as I said on a show there a couple weeks back, on another one there, too, I did with Catherine Agaya there, My special thanks goes out to the Turner Valley RCMP there and Constable Tom Christie for tasering my brother, because that really pushed me to say, fuck it. No matter what they do now, I don't care how much restitution they ever pay me, I'm in this till the end. They want to start tasering us for just asking questions. It's on. It's on. It's on until it's done. And where this finishes up, they're not going to like it very much.
I just want the listeners to know that, guys, the timing is perfect right now. Everything in life has its right timing. And now, you know, it's right. The right moment is right now. There's a lot going on in the world that are, you know, people rising up against the banksters and so on. Me and Dean were talking the other day that this information is not just about getting out of paying your property taxes or driving without a driver's license or opting out of your SIM card. You know, even simple things like, when they're trying to pass a law about being illegal for you to grow your own food, this information comes in very handy.
Yes.
Am I correct, Dean?
Yeah. Oh, there's no question. Like down in the States, that's why I keep trying to tell people. They keep contacting me and they say, well, this pig farmer's in trouble, or this organic farmer's in trouble, or I want to grow my own food. How do I do that without the interference from the government? And I tell them the same answer that I do for people that want to fight traffic tickets or income taxes. You have to learn who you are, and what your person is. And especially down in the United States, you have to stop being a 14th Amendment citizen, and you have to leave the democracy. Send notice, become deregistered as a voter in the democracy, and go back to the law of the land. And leave nothing open to interpretation as to who you are, so they cannot make presumptions and assumptions anymore. And once you've done that, it's game over. It's already done. You've corrected your status. And status is everything in this world. And status doesn't mean what most people think it means. It's just like, who are you? What's your status? What are you? So it's very, very important. Or get like, oh my God, down in the States, they're really hooped. And that's probably not long before it starts coming here. People have to understand, yeah, this is the battle. The battle is here. This is the big one. And the great part is they're actually getting scared now. They're realizing that we're waking up at an unprecedented level. I see it daily now. Whereas before, we used to go a couple of years with absolutely nothing, where everybody was so discouraged to the point where they were just ready to go back and start being slaves again because we'd fed up. But now everybody's waking up. Everybody, it's cool to want to learn freedom again now, I guess. So.
And it's important, and Dean, you and I also talked about this, that it's important to get this information in the hands of as many people as possible, not just a few that are, for example, like we've got right now 17 people in the chat room, I don't know how many. I can't track how many are on actual mobile devices, because usually our live listeners, a good portion of them are on mobile devices. So, and I can't track those. I can only track the ones who are logged into the chat room. But we need to get as many people into this as possible. So I ask our listeners, since you now know that Dean and I are going to be doing this on a weekly basis every Monday, we ask you for your help in spreading the word about this. The more people you get listening to this stuff, the better off it is for everybody, not just you, everybody. We need to reach that critical mass. That critical mass.
That was in a movie I just watched last week. What the hell movie was that? Where they said it a couple... Oh, you know what? I can't believe the subtle hints that were put into that Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Atlas Cloud, is it? They're talking about?
What's that?
Cloud Atlas? Is it the movie with Tom Hanks you're talking about?
No, this was Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh, okay.
I was just like, somebody gave me a copy of it to watch there the other day, and I got watching it, and I went, wow, this movie is just replete with, like lawful rebellion concepts. Like, they're actually trying to teach us something in this movie. It was fantastic. And one of the lines that was repeated throughout that movie was, until every man is free, no one is free. Until the last man is free, nobody is free. And I've been saying that for a year and a half now. I kept telling people, it's not like this is information I can use to just help myself and be free myself, because then you're just one person. There's no such thing as one person being free. You're just in a new prison.
Okay,
so
I want to put something out here, like just a concept, Dean. Okay, so bear with me for a second. Earlier on in the show today, you said that, you know, you have to go up to your employer, and you can debate with him whether or not he's going to employ you without a social insurance number, without you putting down your social insurance number on the
application. I like the word negotiate.
Negotiate,
yeah.
Fine. Now, let's say the employer says to you, absolutely not. We don't want Revenue Canada on our asses, so if you want to work for this company, you have to provide your social insurance number. Now, you can debate with them all you want or negotiate with them all you want. They basically told you that's the bottom line. Now, you have to ask yourself, how important is this job to me? Or
do I want to be the guy to start a chain of events here that's going to lead to the company having to contract with people independently of the government and be one of the first people to take a lawsuit into federal court against the government and the company you work for claiming involuntary servitude?
Exactly.
And depriving you of the right to gain a meaningful livelihood in the private sector. They're screwed. They can't even answer to a lawsuit like that. What some of these companies are doing when people approach them is these companies will say, contact Revenue Canada. And Revenue Canada will send them a letter that says, yes, in order to work in Canada, you require to have a social, like some shit, some absolute fucking crap that makes no, that is meaningless to you. And again, that letter actually could be factually correct. The question is, which Canada? Because to work in the Foreign Corporation of Canada, that's a private that's a private corporation. You obviously require an employee ID number if you're going to be one of their employees. But that has nothing to do with this country.
But isn't in the eyes of Revenue Canada, the social insurance number is identified to them as referred to as a tax identification number?
It's a taxpayer ID. Number.
The taxpayer ID, yeah.
Yeah, taxpayer ID.
So basically, if you're a taxpayer, you have a taxpayer ID number. If you're not a taxpayer, you don't need one.
Yeah, and you've declared yourself to be the taxpayer. You've declared that you're going to hold an office within the government. You've declared where that office is when you gave them your mailing address. So you declared all of these things. They didn't do any of it to you. And then they're just going ahead and they're just using the information you gave them to prosecute you.
Okay. Now, there's also the other issue, which you and I discussed before, is why people who know this stuff, who have been privy to it for several years or so, are not using it. And you and I discussed it is because of the fear factor. Usually these are people who are, either professionals, doctors, dentists, or accountants, whatever the case may be, and they need that designation for them to carry on with their livelihood. Because they figure if they do anything outside the out of line, they're going to lose their designation. Or it could be somebody who requires a license, meaning a restaurant owner or a bar owner, and they're afraid that if they do anything, they're going to have their liquor license pulled or something.
Yes, something like that.
So there's that fear factor, right?
Yeah, and fear and intimidation.
What do you say to those people?
I say to those, I could say a couple of things that most people probably wouldn't like, but it's on the bright side. Let's start with that. There's never been a better time in the history of this planet for people to fight tyranny with less risk. 100 years ago, people would fight to the death to protect their rights.
One second.
Nowadays, you might spend 3 or 4 days in jail. And you get to watch satellite TV and drink coffee nonstop. If that's all people had to do to fight tyranny 400 years ago, there wouldn't have been a friggin' civil war. Civil wars were fought over freedom. And back then, like I say, millions upon millions upon millions of people died fighting for freedom back then because there was no internet, there was no recognition of human rights. Now all it takes is standing up to a cop or refusing to take deductions off people's paychecks as a business owner and maybe going to jail for a couple of days. Like, what are you really risking by fighting? A couple of dollars? Some money? Stuff that means nothing anyways if you put it up to comparison, compared to integrity and morals and trying to help change this planet. And some people are more worried about, whether or not they're going to be able to afford to buy a TV next week or shit. I almost ruined my company with the amount of time I've spent fighting this stuff. I'm actually finally back to full-time running my company and part-time doing the law stuff. But, man, I've spent years on this now, and I've gone to jail, and I've spent the 20 days in jail without charge and realized, finally, well, I knew it before, this is the worst they can do to me. This really isn't all that bad compared to what people have had to fight for and people have had to risk in the past to fight for their rights.
I'm pretty sure, as of now, they realize that they can no longer intimidate you and they leave you alone.
For the most part, yeah. There's still some issues I'm dealing with, but that's because I'm being rather public and I'm being very cocky about it. They usually tend to make examples of those kind of people. They've tried. It's not working very well. I don't believe they're going to come and shoot me. I'm actually not even promoting to people that we rebel or protest even. I protesters are idiots. They go and they cause a bunch of public disruptions out of frustration because they don't know how to go and read a book and properly access their rights. So they gotta fuck shit up for the rest of us. They actually piss me off. When you watch these Occupy Wall Street protesters down in the United States, and they're calling themselves Occupy Wall Street number one. Occupy is an adversarial term. How about Inhabit Wall Street? They're too fucking stupid and uneducated to even use the proper word, number one. Number two, you get guys walking by the camera drinking a fucking large Starbucks latte while they're down protesting corporate greed at Wall Street. Like, these people deserve half of what's coming to them. You don't need to go and protest and do all this stuff. I think it's done out of frustration. I try to forgive these people because they're incompetent. They went to university for 2 years and now they think they know everything and they're going to go and they're going to change the world by protesting. No, you're going to get pepper sprayed and beaten up, and probably rightly so. Go read. Educate yourself. The information is all here. Use no excuses not to learn this stuff and to effect change through the government by assuming your proper role and your proper status, because The other reason they have to convert you from what you are naturally into one of their officers is because if you figure out who you are and you make the claim and you properly establish yourself, you are the boss of the government and they have to do what you say. They don't have to right now because you're just an employee. You're nothing. You have no say in anything because you're just an employee at Tim Hortons. That's it. That's all you're recognized as. And that's all you've ever given them information that would help support.
But you hit the nail on the head there, Dean. I mean, I personally, I myself, I'm willing to do anything for my freedom. So, what Dean said, what is it worth for you to have your freedom? And here's how I see it. You know, if you get thrown in jail for 20 days, it's a small price to pay compared to what you said, how did you know, and back during the Civil War, what they had to pay to fight tyranny. But the silver lining here is this: as more people know this stuff, as more people apply this knowledge, it becomes more futile for them to throw people in jail. Because they know they're beaten. You know, too many people know about it. They're not going to be able to get away with it anymore.
Well, and that's just it. The more they get away with, the more they do. And like you just said there, how do you know they're not going to just charge you more money next month? Because I'll tell you right now, if I had somebody who was paying me money every month for nothing, they'd be getting a bill from me every month if I was a scumbag. Once they know they've got somebody, it never ends. Like with how many people get reassessed from Revenue Canada, and the minute you pay that reassessment, you get another reassessment. They just make this shit up.
Of course. It's free revenue for them.
Yes. So there's actually a lot of CRA tips I can give people here in the near future for what happens when they get an assessment or a reassessment. That's a pretty simple one. The property tax issue. Somebody posted on here about how somebody they know owed money on a MasterCard. Collection agents contacted his work, and they gave his wages to the collection agency. That wouldn't happen if you knew even a little bit about law. That same person just lost his home to this. I'm not sure how a person would lose a home to an unsecured credit card. That's not even possible unless he actually went to court. But again, it's making the same incorrect arguments. Trying to get out of paying a bill. I still pretty much refuse to help people with especially credit cards. Credit cards are not hard to get rid of. But if you just want to get rich or make money or try to get out of paying bills, agreements that you had entered into, I'm not interested in helping those people. You made an agreement, pay it off. That's the end of the story. I mean, I had people pushing me when I was out in BC a year ago. They'd come up to me after I have a little seminar somewhere. They'd be like, Dean, I'm 3 months behind on a mortgage payment, and the bank wants their money right now, or they're going to foreclose next week. They want three payments, and they're going to foreclose on the house. What do I do? I said, make the payments. No, but I don't want to make the payments. I said, well, then you're going to lose the house. Well, no, there's got to be a way I can just get rid of the mortgage. I said, why does there have to be a way? You borrowed the money, didn't you? And these are all correct statements. There's a whole other equation I'm leaving out of this. But I just said, well, I said, I'd make the payments. I said, you entered into the agreement with the people. You didn't have the house before. Yeah, but mortgages are fraud. I said, how is it fraud? Did you have the money to buy the house? Cash? Well, no. I said, did the bank get you the money? Well, yeah. I said, okay, where's the fraud? Well, money doesn't exist. I said, really, it doesn't exist? Well, yeah, this is all worthless fiat currency. I said, oh, do you have a $100 bill on you? And he opened his wallet and he pulled out a $100 bill. I think I said, do you have any money on you? Sorry. And he opened his wallet and he had some money in there. And I said, okay, pull all the cash out of there. He pulled it out. I said, so this is all completely worthless. Yeah, this has no gold backing. It's worthless. I said, okay, give it all to me right now. It's worthless. Give it to me. I'll take it. Well, gee, then it's worth something. I never, ever want to hear the argument ever again that all this fiat currency is worthless. If it's worthless, I'll give you my mailing address right now, and everybody out there listening can send me their worthless fiat currency. I will take it gladly. because it's about as worthless as your labor. That's all horseshit. I think they want people making these stupid arguments in court. Half the stuff that's out there, probably more than half, I bet you 80% of the information that's out there has been started by the government to get people to walk into courtrooms and make some of the stupidest fucking arguments you could possibly think up just to get people to lose to establish case law that really, really negatively affects the rest of us.
Okay, to be the devil's advocate here, though, isn't there some validity to the fact that because they're using fractional reserve, that they're lending you money that they don't actually have? Since they can lend out 10 times the amount of deposits they have?
Well, the problem I have with that is that there's actually a law in Canada, and it's the same one in the States, and it's the same one in any IMF country. Banks cannot lend out any of the depositors' assets. Banks never loan you any of their own deposits. They're certainly not loaning you money that they created through fractional reserve banking. I think that's all just another big scam as well. The credit that you're being loaned is created during the application process, not by the bank. It's created, without getting into too much detail about this, it's created by a third party. The bank has to go to that third party to get the credit. They don't resell your signature. I'm reading that right now. They don't resell it at all, actually. I don't want to get into that, into the banking thing, to be honest with you. I'm telling you right now, on the side of the equation that we're talking with right now, that you're borrowing credit from the bank, you're not getting it from the bank. The bank's getting it from another party. The bank is acting as a middleman, and they're getting an administrative fee for doing it. Okay? But there's always two sides to every equation. And when people finally understand what's going on, and they figure this stuff out, and no one had to teach me this stuff. As soon as I figured out what was going on, I figured out exactly where the banks were getting the money from. You'll understand the other side. You will figure it out. So I'm not giving people the easy answer on that one. And if people want to say, oh, that's because he doesn't know, okay, I don't have an ego. Sure, I don't know. Sounds good to me. That's part of the learning process. I had that 4 years ago when I called somebody for some help on something because I was going to court and I was worried about going to jail for 4 years. And I didn't prepare the way I should have. And I felt the same way some other people out there think, that just because I know something, the obligation is now on me to tell them. It's not. Ah, there we go, creditor. Okay, someone got the right answer. Now they just got to figure out who the creditor is. Okay, so the answer, I called somebody in a panic saying, oh, I'm in court and if this doesn't go well today, I'm gone for 2 years. And they said, well, I guess you better say the right things. I said, well, I don't know what that is. And they said, well, I guess you should have been more prepared and read more over the last 2 years. Like, what do you want me to tell you? You want me to give you like a magic phrase to say in court today is going to get you out of jail free? No, there is no such thing, right? That was a hard lesson I had to learn. And I was terrified for the first day, and then by the end of the third day, I'd figured it all out on my own and got myself out of the mess. So people have to learn this stuff. And if you're only learning it to get rid of a mortgage or a credit card, you don't give a shit about actual freedom. You're just trying to benefit from something. And I'm certainly not going to be one to be around to help people like that. I will help somebody with a driver's license long before I would ever help somebody out of a mortgage situation.
I mean, if you want to be able to live under the jurisdiction of the law of the land, you still have to have integrity and honor your contracts, right?
Honor, honor, honor. Honor is everything.
Okay. Now, Dean, if somebody, let's say, says, okay, I want to learn this stuff, but I really don't know where to look. I don't know where to start. My life is too hectic, I'm too busy, I run two businesses, blah, blah, blah. Could I pay you educate me.
I would say yes to that, because it would probably be one of the first times that's happened.
Okay. Let me put this question out to the audience then. Would you pay a tuition fee in order to learn this information? Is that something, would you see this as form of part of your education process, like when you went to a university? Would you pay to learn this information so that you didn't have to spend the hours of researching and learning yourself, to learn it directly from the horse's mouth?
Yeah, well, you know, that actually just makes sense. I mean, people just don't up and decide one day they're going to learn physics. You can, but you'd be like, well, where do I even start? Oh, how about I just go to university, because they've already got courses there that will teach me everything I need to know start to finish in an easy... Okay, it makes sense. You don't have to start learning physics.
I think that would be if we're trying to reach critical mass, get this information in the hands of as many people as possible, it's probably be a good route to go, because one of the things that I found that turns people off is when they go to these gurus who know information but these guys are charging, like one guy I spoke to, he was charging $5,000 for his courses to learn this stuff. You know, really, if you think about it, $5,000 is nothing in comparison to what you pay for 4 years of university, but still, people don't have the $5,000 to show. And
yeah, who the hell's got $5,000 these days, cash just kicking around?
Exactly. I would like to see something, maybe like a form, some kind of a membership, where you pay a membership fee every month, you know, whatever that may be, $25-$30, and you have access to this information with videos, audios, step-by-step process, that kind of thing. What do you think? What do you think of that?
Probably a much better idea than what I've done in the past, which is just try to put some videos out there teaching people, because I don't think people appreciate it as much when it's just out there for them. Either that, or not only that, but I get contacted sometimes, like, and people say, oh, hey, I tried that thing, I tried doing what you said in the video, it didn't work, I'm in shit now and I need help. And, like, they're expecting me to now do it for free out of some obligation because they did something that I talk about in one of my videos. Now I'm obligated to help them the rest of the way through it. And that's just ridiculous. But there has to be a more comprehensive way, a source of information out there for people to learn. There's no question.
So how would that be? What would that look like?
Geez, you got me. I'm the kind of guy that would just go on for hours and hours and talk about anything that people want to talk about and try to clarify. But when it comes to I think my problem is, because 15 years down the road now, I don't remember what it was like to hear this stuff for the first time. So I wouldn't even know where to start. Like we did today, where I just said maybe we should start right back with the person and what is the person kind of thing. Like, I guess there has to be some kind of we should sit down and talk about maybe some kind of a course outline or something like that I could throw together that we could start teaching people. I don't know.
Okay, all this knowledge that you have, if you were going to put it under one word, like the umbrella of one word, what would you call it? What title would you give it? What title would you give all of this? Sovereignty? Free man? What would you give it?
That's actually a really good question. There's things I've thought up in the past, because every time somebody tries to tell me that we're trying to promote anarchy and lawlessness, I actually tell them, no, it's actually the opposite. Actually,
the
we're trying to teach law, and we're trying to restore law and order, because there is anarchy right now.
Okay, how about Lawful Existence University?
I could get back to you on that. Maybe it should come down to a vote or something like that. Give me a day to think on that one. I can come up
with something
better.
You got it. So I think you come up with a name, and we turn this into a university program where people pay a monthly fee, a very nominal, affordable monthly fee that everybody can afford, and they access this information. I think that route's good in terms of getting this information into as many hands as possible, because you coming on this show and having a few hundred people listen to it, and that's it, is not going to help us reach critical mass. We need to get this into the hands of as many people as possible.
No, it's not bringing people up to the A game level that they need to be at to start taking this stuff on either.
Exactly. And what's going to happen is they're going to use what they hear on the show, they're going to go try to apply it, they're going to get in trouble. Next thing you know, the government is using that against us, saying, see, this stuff doesn't work, so
yeah,
don't even bother, you know?
And I have all the time in the world to try to help people that actually really want to see this stuff through and really give it a good go. If it's just somebody looking to get out of a little problem that they're in and they're not really taking anything seriously, I got better things to do. I got houses to build. I got a company to run. I have a life. I'm not interested. So for serious people that are out there, I've already dedicated X number of years of my life to trying to help people with this. I feel a duty and an obligation to continue doing that for the rest of my life if there's people out there that want to take this seriously and want to learn and want to positively change things around the world right now.
Listen to what Sev says. He says, I'd like to apply for a teacher position. He has no SIN number.
Well, teacher's license, the schools are funded by the government, but they're technically not government. They're like subcontractors. That would be a tougher go.
Dean,
yeah.
He's making a joke. He's saying he'd like to apply to be a teacher in the university of
nice. Now I get that. There you go. The context was missing. No, sir. I actually won't hire anybody who doesn't have a social insurance number.
There you go, Sev. You're out of luck.
I haven't done deductions or taken social insurance numbers from anybody in 15, actually in my entire life that I've been in business. So.
But you know what?
The more
I'm liking the idea. I mean, I myself consider myself one of those people who are, I'm too busy to actually sit down and do the research. And I went to school for 4 years, university, plus, you know, high school before that. So for me to actually sit down and do the research myself, I'd rather have somebody teach it to me and just pay for it. Let me put it to you guys out there. Would you guys pay something like, I guess, $25 to $30 a month as a membership fee in order to have access to a course outline, and it teaches you from step one to step X how to live yourself within the system and not be subject to the system or enslaved by the system. So from step one to step X, whatever step X is, it teaches you step-by-step basis on how to do it. Would it be worth to you? I mean, don't hold me against a number here. I'm just throwing a number off the top of my head. But let's say it's around somewhere $25 to $30 a month. Would that be something you'd be willing to pay for?
Well, I think, and support too there, Tony. If I was to do something weekly, that would be only for students. It's not something that gets out there publicly, because that way we know that people are serious and actually want to, that way I feel people actually value my time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see the comment up there. Somebody says, yes, of course, we pay lawyers more. You know what? You know what's funny about this is I've got a far better track record than defense lawyers. And still, to this day, when people contact me, I've never asked for money up front, but people have never offered either. And most lawyers, you can't walk into their office without putting a $25,000 retainer down on income tax evasion charges. But I can tell you right now, if I was to ask somebody for a couple of $1,000 to help them with income tax evasion, that they would say, no, you get me out of the trouble first, and then I'll pay you. But they'll willingly give a lawyer $50,000 and not even blink. So it's a new political party. We don't need a new political party. We don't want to get involved in the politics of Canada. That's for Canada. Let me make another point here while everybody's thinking on the question that Tony's been posing. People have to remember that the government of Canada plays two, they perform two roles. their one role is to, they were created, basically, over in the UK, for the express purpose of administrating law over here in this geographical area. And their mandate is to uphold already existing laws, which are natural rights. The other side of the equation is that they saw fit to start passing their own statutes and codes that apply to their own employees and foreign and officers of their foreign corporation. So government has no authority in our jurisdiction to pass laws. They only have the authority to uphold the already existing naturally occurring laws. Everything else that they do is completely internal to their own organization only, and that's what the charter says. So we don't need a political party. They work for us. They do what we tell them to without voting. We don't need to vote. That's a scam. It's a con. Gets you to waste your energy trying to build up a political party. So it's a waste of effort. Now, of course, maybe that's something we should talk about in a course outline.
I mean, I don't know. I personally like the idea. Maybe, I mean, it's, you know, it's far from being a concept just yet or an actual system just yet. I guess you would have to yourself, I don't know, come up with a course outline from step one, here's what you do, step two, here's what you do, and so on, so on, so on. I don't know how organized your information is. I mean, I can see this being something great where people will, the word will spread. People will learn, okay, if you want to know this stuff, you know, valid, provable information is out there, and all it's going to cost you is like $25-$30 a month. You become a member, and you have access to this wealth of knowledge. And now, would you take it one step further, for example, if somebody was to use your information to learn off you and they're stuck somewhere legally in a process, would you take one step further and support them, help them?
Yeah, there's no question. I do that now.
Mm-hmm.
So without even expectation of anything in return. The self-assessment donation idea hasn't worked out too well. I've received donations from people that saw the videos, and they, you know, I tell people, I say, hey, you know what, if you watched the videos and you liked it, shit, send me $5 on PayPal so I can spend more time researching and helping people, right? I got to eat. I got to tell you that I'm more passionate about this than I am construction. And the day that this puts just as much money in my pocket as construction does is the day I don't put a tool belt on anymore, except as a hobby.
So that's a concept. But I
think if one of the videos out there has something like 40-something thousand views. Could you imagine if every one person that watched that sent $5? I could do this full time. I'd be helping people for free. I wouldn't even need to ask people for money. When someone who's got no money is being destroyed by Canada Revenue Agency, I can just go in and help them without having to say, well, you know, I'd love to help you, but I need $2,500 because I got to fly out there, I got to do this, I got to do that. You just do that kind of stuff.
Because after all, it benefits all of us. So everybody wins after all, right? In the end.
Everybody wins.
Yeah. Okay, so we're down to our last 4 minutes. So if you guys have no more questions, I hope you enjoyed this first episode of the how-to with Dean Clifford. Next week, I promise you, and Dean, notice I'm saying I promise, so you need to make sure I don't look bad here, okay? You guys should know that Dean is the hardest person to get a hold of. Like I message him all week, Dean, we need to talk before the show. Dean needs to talk before the show. But he's busy with his construction, and I understand. He does got to make a living. But he's the hardest person to track down. So, Dean, I'm putting you on the line now in front of everybody here. So for next week's episode, I promise everybody that by Thursday I will have the topic of next Monday's episode so that you guys can either email me your questions or post them on the Global Fact Group, which I will once again give you the link for if you want to join it. And you need this link because, unfortunately, when I created the group, I made the huge mistake of making a closed group. And once Facebook, being the screw-ups that they are, once a group reaches over 100 members, you can no longer change the status of the group, the privacy status. You can make it more secret, but you can't make it more public, which is really stupid. So the group right now is a closed group. I wanted to have it as an open group, but I couldn't because it has over 100 members in it. So you need this link in order to find it because it doesn't come up in the search. So that's how you join a group. Or you can email me your questions at tony@globalfact2012.com. So Dean, I need the topic. We need to talk between now and Thursday, but the topic for next episode, so I can post that so we can collect questions for you for next Monday. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. It's going to have to be something for beginners, and maybe here's an even earlier place to start before people start asking questions. Is right from the get-go, people need a goal. People need a reason that they got involved in this. What is their higher purpose? What is their reason for wanting to get involved? Where do they want to go with this? What is their destination? Because it's almost impossible to plot a course if you don't have a destination in mind.
That's
sometimes
like
that can start with even finding, yeah, sometimes that can even start with figuring out where you are now. Because you can't even pick a destination until you even know where you are at now. But pick a destination, have a goal in mind before you start asking questions.
Well, actually, I think the goal should be unanimous for everybody. I mean, bottom line, you got to think of this way. Either we're going to free this planet, either we're going to regain our freedom, take the power back from those people who are trying to steal it from us, or we're going to let them continue controlling our lives forever. That's
yeah.
Bottom line, you know?
Yeah.
If you're doing it because you're just trying to get out of your mortgage or your credit card debt, you know, that might be, think of that as being a bonus, you know, but shouldn't be the reason why you're getting involved in this. The reason why you should be getting involved is because you want to do your part, your portion, your contribution in helping humanity in regaining back its freedom and taking back the power. That's it.
Yeah, there we go. Advancing our society technologically, morally, and spiritually. That's exactly it. I don't know how many times I've told people that if we put all the money that these shitheads in power are dumping into wars and nonsense and put that into science and technology, we'd be exploring
okay.
The outer reaches of our solar system at this point.
I have to cut you off here, Dean, because we're down to 50 seconds. So remember,
yep.
People, we need your help. We want to make this show the most popular show on Block Talk Radio. So we need to spread the word about Dean's show every week, How to with Dean Clifford, every Monday, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's 9 p.m. Eastern. Thank you all for tuning in, and we hope to see you again next week. Dean, do you have any closing remarks for 30 seconds?
Not really. I'll be here next Monday, and as long as people have expressed an interest and are serious and want to learn and want to get involved, I will be here. And I guess that follows the mantra that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. I got no problem going back to construction and just not even teaching this stuff to anybody anymore, period. But if people show up and people want to learn, then I will be there as much as they want me to be.
Okay, thank you all for tuning in. This brings us to the end of our show, and we'll see you again next Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Have a good night.